Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdick, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about COVID-19, the healthcare supply chain, and personal protective equipment. Or, maybe more appropriately, what happened to the supply chain when COVID-19 hit and everybody needed PPE. We're going to talk about why the supply chain was unprepared for COVID-19 in terms of getting the PPE we needed to keep frontline healthcare workers safe, where the healthcare GPOs were in all of this, and are we learning any lessons from that experience to be better prepared next time? To tell us how worried we should be, are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Dave, Gary, how are you guys doing?
Well, thank you.
Another Friday during the coronavirus.
Exactly. Almost done with August, guys.
Yeah, it's good to hear both your voices. So we're doing all right. Now, before we talk about PPE and the supply chain, let's talk about the PPE that you guys are using. Have you ordered any masks or gloves online, and did they ever show up?
Well, we get our masks at Costco, and they're in ample supply, and I sometimes think we should have let Costco run the whole thing. And so that's been fine, but it's still pretty hard 7-8 months into this to buy the gloves and sanitary wipes and things like that, for us anyway.
Yeah, Gary, are you stacked with masks and gloves and disinfectant wipes?
Pretty good shape. I use Walgreens, with the local Walgreens, which has had enough supplies pretty much from the beginning. So on the other hand, for the first 3 months or so, March, April, May, I didn't go out, so I didn't have to worry about gloves and masks. But
Got it. We did get an order of the KN95 masks. Not sure how well they work, so I hope we don't need them. So now on to today's topic. Dave, what grade would you give the healthcare supply chain for its response to COVID-19 in terms of getting PPE for healthcare workers, and why?
As you very well know, the tagline for our company, Foresight Health, is outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. And on an outcomes matter basis, I think at best you can give our response as a nation is a D, and that might be generous. We just simply haven't gotten the job done. Early on, complacency, overconfidence, lack of coordination, kind of a Lord of the Flies approach to having hospitals and other types of healthcare providers bidding against each other for vital equipment, vital PPE. The national stockpile was exhausted before this started. There was profiteering. We were learning on the fly. I think, it was a catastrophic failure of imagination. We just did not believe the pandemic would hit our shores, and certainly did not believe it would hit our shores with the impact that it has had. The why is a more interesting question. Even with the best leadership, coordination, and protocols, which we obviously didn't have, I believe we would have confronted challenges to get equipment and PPE where it needed to be, in the quantities it needed to be, when it needed to be there. We had, limited supply meeting elastic demand, and the system catastrophically broke. And I think that points to a major structural flaw within the just-in-time inventory systems that operate at a global scale and have become standard operating practice for most businesses. And in just-in-time inventory, efficiency, not redundancy, has been the paramount goal. A beach ball sells in Frankfurt, Germany. A bell goes off in Taiwan. Suppliers, manufacturers, distributors fill the gap, rinse and repeat. And that works exceptionally well as long as there isn't a break in the supply chain. But as we all know, the coronavirus first broke out in China in a catastrophic way. China did what probably most countries would do. It decided to protect itself first, but that was a problem since they were providing 90% of the PPE to the United States. So they shut down exports. We didn't have a backup plan. Everybody scrambled. So going forward, we're obviously going to need to build some redundancy into the supply chain process for vital PPE and other equipment related to pandemics. We're still kind of stumbling along here 7 months into it. There are still shortages of PPE cropping up around the country. And I think it's going to take a while for us to get the systems in place to be fully operational so that when a pandemic hits next time, we'll have the supplies, the protocols, the coordination in place to respond appropriately.
Thanks, Dave. I think D is generous given the way you describe the situation. So,
I'm a nice teacher. I was a nice teacher.
Gary, what grade do you give the supply chain and maybe specifically GPOs in all of this?
Well, Dave, using the letter grade D reminds me of the old college gentleman's D. I think that, look, we dropped the ball here. And it's pretty clear Dave laid out some of these reasons for it. Let's look at the history for a moment. The national stockpile had been underfunded for some time. And the pandemic plan at the country level had been really ignored, I would say, for some time, probably since Bush. And so we kind of sowed the seeds for the current problem with a ignoring of this at the national level through the last couple of administrations. This current one, as Dave pointed out, not only didn't we have leadership in the sense of positive leadership, we had a lot of ignoring of the problem. It's not really a problem. Let's not deal with it sort of thing. So leadership across the last 20 years hasn't been what we needed. Are we going to learn from that? One of the points that Dave made about a just-in-time inventory system, who's going to pay for the inefficiency when you have to produce goods in areas like the U.S. in some cases where it's just more expensive to do it? Who's going to pay for that? And I get Joe Biden says we're going to produce domestically, which would be terrific in this case, but who's going to pay for that? The hospital's going to pay for that. Is the government going to pay for it? Is the health insurers, the employers? So there's a lot of practical issues. The reason that 90% of the goods are produced offshore is because it was more efficient to do it that way. So at any rate, I'm just trying to make the point that it's a more complicated issue than we might think. I was talking to one of the major retail shops a while back who had been working with the White House to try to free up some goods in different countries, and they were making reference to the millions of gowns in railroad cars stuck in Mexico because we were having a battle with Mexico about goods coming across the border. So, you know, Dave's comment that might have been better to have Costco be responsible for all this is probably actually a pretty good comment. But in any event, I think the GPOs got caught in the same circumstance in a way that all of us did. There wasn't a national plan. They jumped in. I think the GPOs did a lot of great work after the fact, but they were a captive of the same who's going to pay for goods and services that relate to PPE. And it was cheaper to do it offshore. That was their mission, to be the most efficient they could be. And nobody really was willing to pay to do it domestically. Now, we've seen some change in that more recently, of course. But any event, I think it's a pretty complicated issue. I think you have to give the country an F on this one. We just flat out dropped the ball. As Dave says, the more interesting question might be, are we going to actually have the will to make sure that we can clean this up for the current pandemic and then whatever happens going forward?
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Gary's comments, specifically about GPOs? And maybe you could explain what a gentleman's D is.
That one I don't know. I'm old, but not quite as old as you guys.
Yeah, he never got a gentleman's D. He was always one of those students that got an A. He just studied, smart kid. The rest That's of true. Us had to worry about gentleman Ds.
That's right. I was in the front row diligently taking notes at all time and always prepared. You know, great points, Gary. I mean, really, really great points. I've just finished reading Chris Wallace's book about the 110 days from the time Harry Truman took office to the dropping of the atomic bomb. And it brought me back into that World War II mindset. And a terrific book, by the way. And you would have thought that was a very well-established process leading up to the decision to drop the bomb. But it's amazing how much happened in that last 110 days. We experienced a Pearl Harbor type event with COVID, and we treated it like a local skirmish. Now, going back to World War II, when Pearl Harbor happened, the country mobilized on a massive scale to get ready. I mean, we were churning out tanks, at one an hour, battleships at one every couple of days. I mean, it was just remarkable example of American productive capacity when focused on a task. But Gary's right. I mean, we have moved as an economy, global economy, toward amplifying efficiency almost to the extent, the exclusion of everything else. And we have a form of market failure. Now, if you look at the cost that the country's incurred by not being ready to meet the coronavirus, it's hard to argue that a little bit of redundancy in the system wouldn't have paid huge returns. But we have a form of market failure. I think overall, we'll see a little more redundancy built into the private sector response. I can't imagine large health systems, not thinking systematically about how to confront a pandemic going forward. But ultimately, when there's market failure, we need government intervention in some form or another to address the market failure and to do something that's for the good of the commons that individual companies really aren't in a position to buy. So I thought Gary just great points on that.
Dave, that's a good segue into the next part of the conversation, and that's the future. And Gary, let's start with you. Do you think the supply chain will be better prepared this fall when the expected second wave of COVID-19 hits and we have the start of flu season?
Right. Well, it depends on the surge, obviously. So the stronger it is, then the more pressure it's going to be on the system. I think that the large health systems, many of which have developed their own stockpiles now, they'll be in shape to handle this. They're becoming expert at scaling up and scaling down. So we're probably going to be in decent shape there. Some of the smaller hospitals or smaller systems or some of the public systems, health systems that aren't as well funded, like the New York system. I mean, that's where you worry about, or you worry about nursing homes, for example. So I think it'll be spotty. The large systems will probably be in decent shape. Some other providers may not be. So we've got a little bit of the haves and have nots here that will kind of play into this. I don't see any leadership out of the current administration. I've seen things like they're building up the stockpile and so on. But then you talk to some of the providers that are actually out there treating patients, and they haven't seen much evidence of it. So whether we are building up stockpiles, I don't know. I mean, you've got the group of 20 or so health systems and invested in a PPE domestic producer here, and that domestic producer is ramping up as fast as they can go. So there's definitely efforts to do that. I think GPOs are similarly either investing or encouraging or working out contracts with domestic producers to try to up the level of domestic production. So hopefully you bundle all that together and it'll get us through the fall. We probably will have a 2021 hit as well. One hopes that we'll be in better shape there. It's a little tough to tell. We, I think, are struggling without national leadership. I think the Trump administration has forced the states to do it, which is an unnatural position for them. And the states are trying to band together to avoid this, what happened 2 or 3 months ago, where you had states trying to outbid other states and health systems trying to outbid other systems. And part of the problem was that. So hopefully we'll have a more coordinated effort this fall. And it would be expected, I guess you could say, that we'd have an even more coordinated effort next year.
Thanks, Gary. Dave, same thing. What signs do you see that the supply chain will be better prepared? And what signs do you see that we haven't learned our lesson yet?
Well, I've been running with the same group of people along the Chicago lakefront for well over a decade, at least until recently. And our motto is that we start slow and then taper. And
coast to the finish line. I like it.
And I feel like we're sort of addressing or going through this slow motion catastrophe as we approach the fall. We've seen as the hot spots have emerged in places like Georgia and Arizona, just dramatic shortfalls in PPE and testing. And we're still at a point where in a lot of places in this country, it's taking 8 to 10 days to get a test back. And I think because of some of those structural problems that we talked about earlier, that it's going to be hard for the country to gear up nationally to address this if we get a major outbreak. Historically, when we've had catastrophic events in this country, they've tended to be local. And the idea is rely on local resources first, and then the state comes in if the local area can't handle it. And then if the state can't handle it, that's when the federal government comes in. Just think of hurricanes, Katrina, for example, how we address that as a country. And what makes this so different is it is national in scope and potentially all at once. And we still have many places that really can't handle it themselves. And we're confronted by a massive simultaneous challenge, which means that we're going to come back to some of the more blunt approaches to stopping spread, wearing masks, washing hands, social distancing. And as you know, I think Gary's right, it's going to depend on the extent of the surge, but I don't think we should suffer from a lack of imagination this time, that it could be a very, very bad fall.
And thanks, Dave. Gary, anything to add to Dave's comments?
No, I think we all need to head to the bar after this discussion.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about next week. Gary, what's the big story in healthcare next week?
Gosh, I expect that there will be a lot of discussion about Biden versus Trump and how their approach to healthcare will play out. If Biden makes the pandemic the issue with Trump, as I expect he will, then the discussion we had this morning is a forerunner of what will be playing out over the next 80 or 90 days. So getting out in front of that, thinking our way through it might be a lot of focus of the next week or two.
Got it. Thanks, Gary. Dave, what's healthcare's big news next week? What should we be on high alert for?
I guess a couple of things. One is I'm starting to sense for the first time that people are ready to talk about things other than COVID-19. So, you know, for example, healthcare universal coverage. I think that debate is coming back into the national dialogue, and how we get to universal coverage will be I believe, very contentious issue. I'm also a bit of a political junkie, so I was mesmerized in part by the mechanics of the Democrats putting on a Zoom convention and kind of what worked and what didn't work. And there were a lot of things, surprisingly, that worked pretty well. The roll call of the states, which I thought was going to be the hokiest thing ever, was pretty powerful. I think a lot of the speeches were more tightly crafted, in some ways more intimate, because it was just the person speaking directly to the audience, to the computer, to the cell phone, to the TV, whatever. And so we're going to see how the Republicans sort of build on this. And I think it has a lot of implications for how we start to reorganize many of our businesses going forward. You know, what's done in offices, what's done remotely, how do we use video technologies? Are there ways to do things better and better, faster, cheaper, and perhaps more redundantly with virtual systems? So I think we're gonna be focused on the Republican convention, and I think that in combination with the Democratic convention this week will give us some ideas about where we go from here as a country, just in the day-to-day exercise of our business lives and our personal lives.
Got it. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Gary. After listening to this discussion, I think it might be time to order more masks and gloves. Speaking of time, we are out of it for today. So if you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.